This episode is sponsored by Interactive Brokers. And are you ready to put your predictions to the test? Well, with Interactive Brokers Forecast Trader, you can trade your views on key economic and climate indicators. Simply answer yes or no. For example, will the change in U.S. Consumer Price Index exceed 2.6%? Or will the average U.S. temperature in 2024 be greater than 54 degrees? If you agree, buy a yes contract. If you don't, buy a no. It's that easy. Contracts cost 2 to 99 cents. Correct predictions earn $1 at settlement, and incorrect ones settle at zero. Forecast contracts are commission-free, plus earn 4.83% APY on your investment with an incentive coupon. Visit ibkr.com/forecast and make your predictions today. IBKR is a member of SIPC.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
How to stay the course, even through times of doubt. Hey, what's up with the consumer anyway? Powell's Outlook moves markets, predictable. And our guest today is Brian Dress, from Left Brain Wealth Management. All this and much more on episode number 884 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And a very happy September to you. Welcome in the month that is going to start the end of year process. You know, here it is where we are, that everybody says volume starts picking up. Everybody's back from the beach or the Hamptons or wherever it is that they go vacation after Labor Day. And it is that time of year that supposedly and factually, to a degree, we see that change in dynamic where there's a lot more movement and potential volatility. September on its own has a very, very difficult history. Generally speaking, especially after a few months of up, September somehow fails. A lot of things going on there before we enter in the final quarter of the year. And in this particular instance, we have at our backs a bit of a wind that is blowing and helping us push ahead, because now we have the Fed that has confirmed seemingly very clearly that they're pretty excited. Now, that may not really end up being in a rate increase immediately. I mean, they're excited about, well, job well done. They're the mission accomplished. They're victory. I mean, that's what we're seeing, right? And they could do that victory lap and hold it up. And we conquered this issue. We're no longer concerned about inflation as much. We're much more concerned about what's happening with employment. But don't worry about employment, because employment, well, it's just a statistical issue right now. Yeah, can't keep up with the hems and haws and the ins and outs of what they're trying to accomplish. But we know one thing is sure, that they need to lower rates, because the mound of debt that they are paying, or the U.S. government is paying debt service on, is absurd. So that's what's happening. We're going to talk about a lot of this, and talk about in particular some of the things that I have questions on with regards to how to make sure that you're comfortable with your decision making and how to stick to those decisions, whether you may be momentarily wrong, but long-term you may be right. We're going to talk about that with our guest today. What else do we have to talk about? Well, I think that the latest move off the bottom, that V move that we saw after the yen debacle a few weeks ago, maybe close to a month now, has pretty much been swept under the carpet. So that's somewhat good. We see better data from housing. We see that the inflation rate is somewhat stabilizing. Price is still ridiculous. Services indexes are higher. Manufacturing is slowing down, again, showing what is happening with the goods versus services relationship. I had somebody recently write me and say, you know, what's going on? Because I see weakness from friends telling me that certain areas, and those particular areas that he was talking about in this email, was related to goods. I said, yeah, some areas around the country, and generally speaking, the goods, you know, the manufactured finished goods area slowing down. And that's going to hurt the transportation sector, for example. But people are still traveling. They're still going out to eat. They're still doing all sorts of things from a experiential type of vantage point. And that's good. That's good because that's holding up. That's holding up the entire economy, actually, because we've seen the manufacturing slip not only here in the U.S., but around the world. One of the things that we did see, and it was something we've talked about for months, if you remember, has been that our allocations and our projection has been for a weaker dollar. And in particular, we thought that dollar would weaken and would be very beneficial to things like emerging markets or non-U.S. and non-U.S. currency-related investments, whether stocks or bonds. That's been very good over the last 4 weeks, something that we think will continue, particularly if the Fed sticks to and the data continues to provide that there is a weakening happening. That will support a weaker U.S. dollar moving forward. Well, I don't want to get too into the minutia of what we saw because we've been talking about that, whether it's on DH Unplugged. We've been talking about that in the last few podcasts. I do have a lot of questions for our next guest, so I want to bring him on right now without further ado. And that's his name is Brian Dress. He's with Left Brain Wealth Management. He's got almost 2 decades experience in the investing industry. And before joining Left Brain, he spent nearly a decade managing as an independent portfolio manager of derivatives, focused mainly in the oil and gas and commodity markets. That's a lot. Talk about volatility. And he had a concentration in international economics. From his BS, he earned in international relations. He's a CFA. He went to Georgetown University. So with all that, we know his credentials. Let's bring him right on, shall we? And our guest today is Brian Dress from Left Brain Wealth Management, all the way coming to us from Chicago. What's going on, Brian?
Not a lot, Andrew. Always good to be with you. I enjoy the conversation, so looking forward to today.
Great. You know, you've been on before. A lot of people that have been on the show have a history of being on the show, right? You know, whether it's recent or sometime back. And what I've been doing lately is trying to get a little bit more detail, a little more in-depth about who you are. So I want to ask you a question to start this thing off so my listeners can really get a better understanding of who you are and why you do this. What was the reasons that you recall for being in this industry? What lit your fire? What lights your fire? Why did you get into this and why do you stay in it?
So when I was a kid, I used to watch Wall Street Week with Louis Rukeyser with my dad.
Love it.
And then Jerry Glanville, I think was the name, right? On the radio.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what got me started. Always been a numbers guy and always been into investments. Actually started in the trading business. So I was a futures trader for about 13, 14 years. Now I'm a retired, recovering futures trader.
Oh, that's like a lifetime, 14 years on the futures trading. Wow.
It is. But always wanted to be in the market. So about 6 years ago, joined Left Brain and joined Left Brain because specifically we do custom portfolios and we're really in the investments, in the weeds of the investments. So I don't think I would have been able to join another firm. I wanted to join a firm that was going to let me do investments. So that's what got me here and that's what keeps me here.
It's funny, when you say in the weeds, I know you guys. So to expound on that just for a second for the audience, you know, these guys do a very interesting and very detailed look and they had a whole research, well, you still do, but a research arm that would really get down and dirty into a lot of the minutia, I dare say, of companies, right?
We do. We make all our own investment decisions. So that has to be powered by a whole research apparatus. We've built a software system that we're always changing, always iterating. And then we've got a team of analysts that work with us as well. So we're reading all the earnings calls of the companies that we follow and that we own for clients. And there's no really other way to do it unless you want to farm this whole investment part out. So that's kind of how we do it. And that's what powers the business.
So that's interesting. I'm just flying off the cuff here, but with sure. The advent of all the AI, which by the way, can I just say something today, in particular today, I've been using ChatGPT just for like cleanup of grammar and maybe ask a question here or there to see what it says, just to kind of get an understanding of the depth and ability of this thing. So very recently, though, I decided to go to Gemini, the Google counterpart, if you will. And I did two or three different requests, and I think all three came back with bad information. One of them was, I said, I don't know why I said this, but tell me about how September's market ended. And it gave me a whole storyline about September 2024's markets. I'm like, wait, we're not even there yet. The second thing was I asked about presidential cycles, I believe. No, I asked about September. Oh, I asked about the history of September's markets and volatility and how that compares to other months around the year. And it gave me an answer, which was very long. But in the end, it said, in particular, September, as you recall, would be where there was a great deal of market volatility due to the crash of 87 and the September 11th terrorist act. And I said to myself, gosh, what looks funny there? The problem with that answer was that, you know it, right?
October was when
it was October of 87.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Yeah, I heard that on Louis Rukeyser.
Exactly. But let me ask you this. So with the advent, now that I just totally threw them under the bus, with the advent of AI, is there anything that they could do to read through some of the earnings calls and maybe give you some information in a faster clip?
So I've tried playing with it a little bit about two or three quarters ago. I should go back and see how that goes, but it's obviously always iterating and always getting better. But yeah, that's definitely one application from our point of view that I think it could really be helpful is sorting through all this stuff. Obviously there's a ton to read on when we follow, I don't know, 100 companies or so pretty closely. So yes, definitely agree with that. I would say AI in practice, not necessarily ready for prime time.
Yeah.
It's generally pretty good at finding information that's out there and putting it in a digestible form. So, you know, kind of the things that humans are, you know, trying to get those things off of humans' plates and get them to doing the things that humans are best at, the creativity of it all.
Well, that's a good point. It digests it, then it regurgitates it. That's the problem.
Right. And then, and the kind of the promise of AI has been, you know, predictive, right?
Yeah.
We're looking for something predictive. Right now, it seems like it's good at, you know, what information's out there, synthesizing that. But we're not to that next step yet. So, yet.
Exactly. Okay, let's get into a few things here. A lot of things going on end of year. You know, we have things that are from now through the end of the year. We're talking about Fed decisions. We're talking about elections. We're talking about just seasonality and all the good things. You know, we could talk about what's going on. But a lot of complacency was in the market for a long period of time. And people can move in and out of being relatively calm to all out panic, right? We saw the VIX go to 65 in a day, one of the largest, if not the largest spike in a single day of the VIX.
Yes.
And crazy, you know, you wake up in the morning and NASDAQ's down 6% and all this. So I think that everybody is and has been calling for a correction that hasn't happened. Now, let me just state this and set the question up for you. There was about an 8% top to bottom correction, if you want to take the worst case scenario in indices. Right. You know, a month ago or so, well, within about a month ago or so. And, you know, people then got panicked and said, okay, I'm done. I'm out. It was amazing because it was like happened so fast. It was very stealth, I thought at least. And it wasn't like, oh, this caused this or that caused this. It was just like out of the blue to a degree. What is one of the things that people could do during corrections and what maybe you've seen and what you counsel people on to do to help them through that?
I want to just note something that's interesting to me, which is, you know, a lot of people have been out of this market for a while and they're always waiting for a correction to get in. You know, I'm waiting for a pullback to get in. And when the pullback comes, do they actually get in?
No.
I'm skeptical on that.
No, because they say it's going lower. I knew it.
I'm glad you said that because I'm just getting a little bit tired of the people who are trying to outsmart the market, you know. Just look over the history of the market over, I don't know, whatever time frame you want to talk about, 50, 100 years. It just goes up more often than it goes down. Mm-hmm. And so you've got that tailwind behind you. And, you know, early in my career, struggled with this kind of in 2008, did really well when markets were going down as a futures trader. Wasn't able to make that transition, didn't have the experience when things started to go higher in 2009. I think everyone who's an investor, everyone has to have this, go through this process of understanding how things work. When markets are weak, it's an opportunity, especially for young investors. We work with investors of all ages, but a lot of my book is younger people and tend to counsel them that lower prices are actually good for you because especially when markets have been hot, it's been hard to get in. It's really an opportunity in this case. The trend overall has been bullish over the last, 18, 24 months. And then we've got, without getting too deep into the macro, it does seem the Fed's going to go lower with rates.
They need to.
Yeah. And so the data tells us that that's going to happen at some point soon. So the old adage of don't fight the Fed, again, it's all in your favor as an investor in equities right now. Yeah. So,
by the way, do you know what we call here people that try to outsmart the markets?
Oh, tell me.
Poor. It's very simple.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say something about quixotic or something along those lines.
The problem is, yes, I agree with you. You know, it's funny. If you look at long-term, markets go from bottom left to top right, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. There are stretches that they go down a bit. There are stretches they go sideways for a bit. It is in everyone's best interest, the economy, the president, the CEO, the chairman, the investor, the suppliers, the new companies coming on board, the stock market itself, the mutual funds, the managers. It's in everyone's best interest for markets to go up.
Yes.
It is in few people's, not none, but is in few people's interests for markets to go down. When I say markets, I'm talking about the totality of it all, right?
Right.
But the problem is if you know some of the people who benefits from the markets going down, for example, and I'm not pulling his name out of my hat, but it'll come. I can see his face as clear as day. One of the great short sellers of our lifetime. He was unbelievably good for a long time. Had billions under management. I don't know. I can't pull. Oh, almost had him. Paulson. Paulson is an example.
There's another guy too.
And he would come on. He had these very thick glasses. He had blonde hair. He was always talking about shorting this and that. I think he shorted Netflix forever, Tesla forever. But the problem is they went from billions under management to maybe a couple hundred million. And how did that happen? One, they lost clients, and two, they lost money.
Yes.
So it's a very difficult thing. And market time, I can tell you, that it's like a broken clock. Elaine Garizella, you remember that because she was on Louis Rukeyser as well, right? You know what I'm talking about, right? Big redheaded. She reminds me of Loretta Mester somehow. I don't know why, from the Fed. But she was right on the 87 crash. Dead spot right on. And that's it. Her crystal ball like worked once. And then she was popularized. When's the last time you heard the name Kathy Wood?
Right. Exactly.
Right. So what happens is you find these market profits, with not profits as in money.
PH profits.
And then it changes. But here's the thing. Is there a time that individuals actually should worry? And if they are, because you don't want to stay balls to the walls all the time, do you?
I mean, we're going to make adjustments. Like in 2022, when things were weak, we definitely made adjustments. So that's those are the moments you have to make some changes. You know, sometimes growth goes out of favor. We're growth managers in large part. And, you know, sometimes it's time to be defensive. Being in cash is, it's hard to make a case for cash, especially in low interest rate environments, but it does make sense.
You can get 5% now.
Yeah, today.
Not the worst, not the worst thing.
Let's talk in, you know, 6 months, but.
right.
But there's always opportunities. And we got to make adjustments when markets, you know, do change. There are times, there are periods when markets change, but it's hard to stay out of the market. You know, our clients ask us to be invested for them. And
that's what they hire you for.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, we get new clients and they say, are you ever going to keep cash behind and that sort of thing? I say, you know, if you want to do that, keep it on your side. I don't want to charge you for that service.
I mean, I use sometimes cash as a buffer for clients and opportunities. You know, when that whole breakdown happened a few weeks ago or whatever, last month, whatever exactly it was.
Sure.
We actually pushed cash in where we had it.
Right.
I mean, that day, that morning, exactly. Like 11 o'clock in that morning, we're like, hey, go. Which turned out to be a very good move as of this moment. Okay.
Yes.
What about, but is there a time to worry? There's got to be a time that we worry. I mean, I looked at some really fascinating discussion today that looked at, you know what, can I pull this up and talk to you about it? Because I think it's really interesting if I could find it.
Sure.
Here, it's right here. It was on Instagram, which already puts a little crimp in this. Okay. Just bear with me. The similarities between 2007 and 2024.
Oh boy.
I know. Sorry. There you go. But I want you to debunk this. That's fine. July 2017, 2007, the SPX tops. 2024, guess what date that was that the SPX topped?
What date?
Yeah, July 17th. in 2017, there was a 9.5% correction. In 2024, there was 8.6% correction. We just saw that. 2007, there was a full recovery, basically, of all of the losses. In 2024, basically a full recovery. We're a little bit lower than the top, right? In 2007, on September 18th, 2007, there was rate cuts. 2024, we're looking at September 18th as a rate cut, right? Aren't we saying that?
Yes. It sounds to me that people are trying to fight the last war.
Yeah, Andrew. And then 2007, the market collapse, we'll see. But yeah, that's interesting because, you know, people say don't fight the Fed, unless you're really bullish and you don't give a shit and all you do is fight the Fed no matter what, or stay long anyway. Is there a time to worry? That's my question to you.
Yeah, I you know, my view on it is when there's a down year, we're going to be down. And that's okay. You know, you look at some of the charts, especially in some of these growth stocks, it's in individual cases, you know, like Amazon's been down over 50% a handful of times. It's just part of the price you pay for being in the game. When markets are down, like in 2022, we're going to try to mitigate the loss.
Right.
But it would be foolish to say, or there'd be a lot of hubris behind it to say, oh, we're going to find a way to be up in a down year like that. Yeah. And beyond that, if you're trying to have a strategy that, you know, makes money in a down market, you're going to miss a whole lot of the upside. And I think that's a much bigger problem. You know, just fundamentally speaking, obviously the most you can lose on a stock is 100%, but the most you can make is infinite.
Yep.
So that's a huge, you got to consider that mathematical reality. And, you know, if just pulling this out of my hat, if markets are up 7 or 8 years out of 10, you better be long.
So what about hedging? Do you do any, or whether you do it or not, what's your thoughts on hedging? Because that could be almost like a sector, right? You take, I'm just picking a number, I'm just making this up, you know, 10% of your portfolio during a downtime and say, you know, we're going to hedge a little bit. I mean, it may not do a lot for you in the totality of it all, even if you get, you know, a 20% gain on the hedge portfolio, but it's whatever. It's, you know, still a couple percent you'll make on the portfolio. What's your thoughts on hedging?
I think it's hard. I think you're really just going to denude a lot of your gains by hedging. And, you know, the hedge works how many times, percentage of the time? Not a lot. So you end up spending a lot of money on it, however you want to do it. If you're buying puts or if you're selling calls, I mean, I guess you can make a case for selling calls.
Selling calls is different.
That's a specific strategy. But yeah, if you're hedging a lot of the time, you're really gonna, you know, sand down a lot of your gain there, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think there's like, for instance, I like to have a certain amount of money in, say, energy at any given time, because there's a certain counter trend, counter cyclicality to that with a lot of the other stuff we hold. So I like to do it that way, where maybe you have a few, a little bit of defensive part of your portfolio that will perform in not such a great time. Again, you're just trying to lessen the losses in the loss periods.
Yeah.
Because again, whatever percentage of time the markets are up is much higher than the time that the markets are down.
I want to put a little pin in that discussion of some things that may be defensive in a time when maybe markets will be reacting negatively. And I have something that I've been looking at and kind of haven't done to the degree that I'd want to be honest with you. But we'll talk about that. Let's take a quick break. We'll come right back with Brian Dress from Left Brain Wealth Management. Let's talk about Interactive Brokers, because Interactive Brokers has key competitive advantages for sophisticated investors like you. Interactive Brokers charges USD margin loan rates from 5.83% to 6.83%, rated the lowest margin fees by stockbrokers.com. How about that? Their clients also earn extra income by lending their fully paid shares of stock. So join Interactive Brokers clients from over 200 countries and territories to invest in stocks, options, futures, funds, and bonds on 150 global markets. Of course, rates are subject to change, but the best informed investors choose Interactive Brokers. Learn more at ibkr.com/compare. Okay, back with Brian Dress, and I told you I want to talk about a variety of things. And I have a pin in something that I'm going to bring back in a minute, but let's talk about cybersecurity, can we? What is going on? First of all, cybersecurity companies have done really well, but many of them have done miserably, awfully, terribly, awful. So there's obviously some that are good and some are bad. There's a continued opportunity out there. Companies are going to get hacked. Is anybody even worried anymore about hacking? Because every piece of information seems to be available on the black market already.
Come on. People aren't worried about hacking?
They're worried about hacking, but it's like our data is out there already. I mean, between the AT&T deal and the stuff over the years, and not to mention Facebook, I mean, pretty much everything is out there already. Not that I'm not worried about my stuff. I'm sure my stuff is somewhere.
It's less that. It's more that from the enterprise point of view. You look back to what we saw. Again, this is a little bit different, but you know, we had this Delta outage, this CrowdStrike outage, and Delta was impacted and a number of other companies. I thought that showed how vital some of these systems are.
Yeah,
realistically. Did. And you know, and again, it's another opportunity when you see this is one of our favorite stocks is CrowdStrike. I'll be flat out honest with you. And
well, who else is in the space? Give me some of the names in there.
There are other companies that are, you know, we like not quite as much. Palo Alto Networks is one, definitely. And
isn't there like F5 Systems? No, is it begins with an F? I don't know. I'm sorry.
Fortinet's another. But no, we're stock pickers. So we've played around with some of these other stocks, but no, that's our favorite by far.
All of these have had a lot of ups and downs. CrowdStrike got smoked not too long ago. Palo Alto got absolutely obliterated not too long ago also. So what are you seeing as the main thing here? Is it the continued movement towards technology offsite and the need to and the massive data that's everywhere? Now is that the play?
So I'm glad you asked that. I actually was doing some research before we started to speak today. And last year there was a 75% increase in cloud intrusion. So obviously most data is on the cloud. You know, you kind of started this conversation from the standpoint of, you know, being hacked as an individual, but the cost of being hacked as a enterprise is infinitely higher. Almost all the major enterprises now are in the cloud. And so obviously the bad guys know that as well. So they're directing a lot of their attention to that area and that segment of the market. What's interesting, and again, AI has been one of the biggest investment themes of the last couple of years and something we've been involved with, but the rise of AI is increasing the threat too. And not only that, today we do think it's going to get worse. And we're actually buoyed by the fact that, you know, the chief technology officers and information security officers in, you know, the world's biggest companies are dedicating a lot of spend to this area. So again, CrowdStrike, we think, is the best. The stock dropped almost 40% in basically overnight when we had that outage. But what I wanted to say was, when you're an investor, there are these moments when companies are terrific and things don't really change from a fundamental point of view. Maybe you have a point in time or something happens like we saw with CrowdStrike, and those are opportunities. Another one that comes to mind is what happened with Chipotle a number of years ago with E. coli.
Yeah.
And it didn't really mean anything different for the fundamentals of the business. It just was, there was a ton of headline risk.
It could have meant something, but it didn't.
It could have. Right. So, but it's a lot of times you get a headline that makes people sell when it really doesn't, it's really not borne out by the fundamentals. So yeah. As an investor, that's a lesson you need to learn if you want to find a way into a company that's been up, you know, over 100% in the last couple of years. It's really those are the moments. But I know it's difficult to do it. And like we said about corrections, we're waiting for the correction.
Yeah.
When it comes, we don't want to do anything. So
that's an important thing. I think, you know, you and I can stress something for the listeners here. This is the same lesson you'll learn in marriage. You know, do you want to be right? Or do you want to stay married? You know,
yes.
Do you want to be right or do you want to make money?
Right.
You know, and if in fact you are all about, oh my God, I knew that correction would come, and you've been out of the market or you've been short for the last year and a half, and now all of a sudden you made back 5% or 10% on your money, but you're down 30%. You know what? Not the smartest strategy ever.
I always laugh about short sellers too, because when they get so exuberant when markets go down, but they tend to snap back up pretty quickly, and you never know, did they cover in time to really take full advantage of it? You know, they don't know when to declare victory and move on.
I mean, I have no problem. We do short selling for stocks, yeah, or indices or options right now. You know, we've had some shorts on for some hedges, but the bottom line here is I agree with you that you got to do that. That's a smaller part of the whole deal. It's definitely very difficult to do for the whole thing. So now, with all this going on, with interest rates coming down a bit, as we've seen it from 4.6 to 3.7 or so on the 10-year, the right. idea that the Fed is going to, you know, do something on the 18th, everybody expects that to be something good. I, by the way, think that the rate cut cycle is not a good thing because it shows the weakness in the economy, and that's something out there. But okay.
Right.
I know you and I talked before. And we talked about this idea that you're doing less in fixed income and you've shifted your focus to getting income, but on through, I think we talked about bond-like equities, which are these higher dividend paying stocks with strong histories, right, of dividend increase. The first thing that popped in my mind was where I had a pin that I talked about a moment ago was utilities. Is that in that genre for you?
We don't tend to do a ton with utilities. Just with the interest rate sensitivity, you mentioned one that's interesting, that NextEra, but there's more of a fundamental case for that one, especially with what's going on with data centers and everything else.
Right. You want to talk about that? Can you expand that, please?
So data centers are extremely energy intensive. So And data centers are what powers artificial intelligence, which is obviously growing explosively. So there's definitely an investment case out there for getting involved with certain certain names that are involved with power generation that goes to these data centers. I think early in the year, we were looking at what was, you know, top 10 performers in the last the first 6 months of the year. I believe Constellation Energy was on there, and we were kind of flummoxed. And then it occurred to us, oh, well, it's because they're generating the power that's used in AI. So it's not really a play of, again, we're not really that invested in utilities, but it's not a matter of playing it for income necessarily. I think there's a fundamental case behind that.
Well, not only that, you're also a growth player more so. Utilities right. are the antithesis of that. So
no, and so just to kind of go back to what you were mentioning about fixed income. Last time I was on here, I'm sure I was jumping up and down saying it was time to buy bonds. I'm going to go ahead and pat myself on the back on that one.
There you go. Give it a little pat.
We were saying, so there was like a 7 to 9% opportunity in corporates, the kind of the space we were playing in, which is kind of the lower end of investment grade, the higher end of high yield. That's now about 5 to 7%. So part of what that says is that the market has been making the move for the interest rate move for the Fed before the Fed makes the move,
yep.
Which is kind of how it always works. But right now, I mean, there's available yields out there still in bonds that are going to be better than what you're going to be able to get in 1, 2, 5 years from now or however the cycle plays out. I do want to say this. If you have money in cash and CDs, getting 4 or 5% savings accounts, CDs, that was a good play. Obviously, you got a risk-free return there. But I think right now you have a problem. If you have 1 year CDs, go out and look at the CD curve for 3 years, 5 years. The rates are much lower.
Mm-hmm.
That's telling a story, which is when your 1 year CD matures, what we call reinvestment risk, what are you going to replace that with? So that's why we're saying we still like some bonds and we're still buying some bonds. But to your point, we're moving on to what we call bond-like equities. So not necessarily utilities, but there are a number of companies out there that pay most of their cash flow out in the form of dividends. And so the reason we like that is A, obviously the income, but B, that really does decrease the amount of volatility in the stock because it's more of an income play, right? And so market understands that. And these stocks tend to be fairly not so volatile, I guess I'll say. And so it mm-hmm. sort of sits somewhere between stocks and bonds. And then we've put together a list of about 30 of these that have an average yield of over 7%. And not only that, some of these have qualified dividends, which means it's not ordinary income on the dividend. Mm-hmm. It's cap gains rates. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of really good opportunities. If you're an income investor, we've got to find a new way to deal with things. If interest rates go down, you're going to be in trouble if you're in cash or CDs. Not only that, just that relationship between bond prices and stock price, so dividend stock prices and interest rates. If interest rates fall, you will get a bump in some of the prices of these assets.
Right. So do you have a name you can say that fits that description?
I've got a lot, but one we wanted to talk about today was Ares Capital. That's ARCC. And that's a business development company. They've got a yield over 9%. This is a qualified dividend. So just, you know, especially if you're in a high tax bracket, this is, really attractive. You know, the tax effective yield is going to be over 10% for you on that. This is a company that does direct lending. They also take some equity positions in non-public companies, but, what's interesting about them is over half of their book is first lien debt. So, you know, if a company that they invest in does go bankrupt, they're the first in line to get paid back.
Oh,
and the weighted average yield of their debt investments is over 12%. So obviously we think that the 9% is pretty sustainable in terms of their dividend. I wanted to mention this on these type of securities is what's really important is their dividend history. So we went back and looked at Ares Capital's dividend history over the last 10 or so years. Other than a couple of blips where they dropped the dividend by a couple of cents. So that was in 2023 and 2020. So after 2022 and after COVID, they dropped the dividend slightly. They've persistently increased the dividend. So that's what you're looking for in these type of securities. And we also like the fact they've got a pretty differentiated portfolio. They're in software, healthcare, insurance, energy, a number of different areas. So it's not, you know, concentrated in one specific sector. And then finally wanted to mention, company's got about $1 billion in cash flow on a yearly basis. They're paying out between 60 and 90%. So just reconnecting to kind of what I mentioned in the conceptual point of view, they're paying out most of their money, most of their profit in the form of dividends. And so that really does dampen the volatility of the stock.
Interesting. So the opportunity here is for a pretty good income stream with a solid potential for increasing dividend, which is a qualified dividend that you said. And an alternative to maybe some of the fixed income that will be wearing down off for a while and reducing the potential for reinvestment risk.
Yeah, so I've been putting clients in, you know, bonds that are in the 10, 15, 20 year duration, just kind of expecting rates to fall. And just even more simply than that, just locking in rates of return for so that's predictable for people who are going into retirement. So that's there. But yeah, that we want to have a company. We want to be involved in securities where we do have that robust dividend history. And so we can feel pretty good that this is a sustainable
right.
Concept.
All right. Let's talk about some practical items here. Let's talk about, so we like this Ares, we like this ABC company, we like CrowdStrike, we like this, we like that. Talking to the individual, well, we could talk about two things. And talking about as a professional money manager, we could talk about the individual. What happens when a trade goes bad? Like practically, what kind of things can people do to keep themselves? Well, there's two things. I guess there's what could people do when a trade is going bad, right? There's that. It's going bad. And how do you identify that? And what happens when the trade goes bad?
So from my old world, turning a trade into an investment is something that people do often, which is terrible. Don't do that.
Can you expound on that with it? Because I know what you mean.
Yeah, so it's funny. I don't trade anymore. But what people sometimes do is they'll say, oh, okay, I want to make a quick buck buying XYZ or selling it. And it goes against them over a course of a week or a couple of weeks or whatever. And then it just stays in their portfolio. Turning a trade.
So you went from renting to owning.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Without making an actual decision,
mm-hmm.
I'll definitely.
Well, the decision would be, here's the decision. Let me just throw this out. This is the same thing about people who are out of the market, right? That can't get in because they're waiting for the dip, but they never do. The decision is this. If it went up, they were right and they're going to stick with it. If it goes down, they're wrong. They're going to stick with it. Right. You follow what I'm saying? That's kind of the duplicity of this decision, which is just really singularly, we're just going to stick with it.
Yes. That's called lying to yourself.
Yep.
No, but from our context, we don't really look at it that way. So sometimes things do go against you. Like I did mention that example of Amazon, or you can look at a Netflix or a number of other companies or Meta, where their stock price cratered, but it didn't mean you needed to be out of it. So what I'm trying to say is it's the fundamentals that matter. So we don't sell stock because it went down 30%. We may sell that stock, but we're going to go and look at the fundamentals of what's happening. That means going and reading the earnings calls. Did they change their guidance? Is there a competitive dynamic that's changing where they used to be dominant and now they're, you know, a number of other competitors coming into the space and, taking some of their cheese. Those are the things we're looking at that matter. So you have to separate stock price change from business change. You know, fundamentally, what we're trying to do as investors is own the best businesses. So let's take a step back and understand that. Again, we're talking about long-term investing. So if the stock price changed, like in a CrowdStrike, for instance, but the fundamentals of the business didn't really change, well, why would you sell the stock at a low ebb yeah, like that?
I hear you. Let me flip this on its head, though.
Sure.
Fundamentals don't change, but somehow the stock skyrockets. What do you do?
Good question. We tend to just stick with it, to be honest with you.
But that's kind of, seriously, if I may push back on that for a second.
Push back.
Because the fact is that, hey, you know, let's just take Amazon for the hell of it, okay? No, let's take Apple. Better yet, let's take Apple. Apple, for years was, you know, everybody knew it was cash cow, you know, all the things going with the buybacks were going on, and Berkshire owned it. Yeah. But it had a PE that was under market, right? But everybody just said, okay, that's because it's kind of like this a mature company and everybody knows where it's going. And then all of a sudden, it hockey sticked. Now, I'm not saying it's wrong or right. I'm just telling you what happened.
Yeah. So
fundamentals didn't change.
So it's interesting you say that because we did sell Apple early this year and we missed a lot of that. And I've got to make peace with something like that because that's just what happens. I wanted to just bring up a quick example, which is NVIDIA. So that's one where the perception has been over the years, it's expensive. So understanding as a growth investor, what's going on here. So you have a tailwind, which is earnings per share continue to grow. And sometimes what happens is a stock may appear expensive, but then when you get the next quarter of results, it doesn't appear expensive anymore. Mm-hmm. So in the growth space, that's what happens a lot of the time. Sometimes prices appear to be ahead of themselves, but they really, the fundamentals don't say that. Now, sometimes we're wrong and we miss. And for instance, like Zoom, we were long Zoom and did well with Zoom and ultimately were profitable on Zoom, but you know, we could have sold it a whole lot earlier than we did. I think we're just gonna have to accept that happens sometimes. With growth stocks, again, going back to that mathematical reality of you can make infinite money on stocks. You go back and look at a Microsoft over the last.
No, I get it.
Yeah, it's just.
I'm just saying that sometimes a stock.
I see your point.
All I'm saying is sometimes a stock will do something. Look, we know that approximately, give or take, I'm going to just even take it on the downside. About 80% of a stock's variability, volatility is related to the actual market itself because. What we know of indexing, passive investing, and benchmarking. So we know that the majority of that, and what happens is sometimes people get, you know, we could say, don't sell Microsoft, even though it's down 30% because we have COVID going on and bam, this is just a once in a lifetime thing. It's going to come back. Fine. On the other hand, oh my God, AI, everybody's jazzed up about AI. It's moved stocks up so ridiculously. We'll hold it. It's like, wait, isn't that the exact same discussion? I'm not even saying that my belief. It just seems like the exact same discussion backwards and forwards.
No, you're right. It's just the problem is that a lot of times if you sell these stocks, you're going to watch them go up 10x from there.
All I'm saying is trimming a position. That's all just like you'd buy in on the
dip. I'm not against it. I've done it before.
I'm not trying to change your mind. I'm just trying to.
No, you're not. You're not going to change my mind.
I'm not going to change the mind of a guy that was in the pits of futures trading for 15 years. I'll tell you right now, it's not changing. All right. What's your Jarvis newsletter? Tell me about that.
So we have a quarterly newsletter, Jarvis newsletter. Been a little bit on hiatus this summer, but we will be back in the next few weeks. And then we've got a YouTube channel. Definitely would have people go on and subscribe to our YouTube channel. We're out every couple of weeks with videos on there. Sometimes it's market updates. Sometimes it's financial planning topics. So if you're an investor trying to figure out what you're going to do with your portfolio, I think it's a great place to start. If you want the real skinny, if you don't want to watch CNBC and try to figure out what to do from there. Yep. So,
and how do people get in touch with you? What's the exact URL?
So go to Left Brain Wealth Management on YouTube, or you can just search Left Brain Wealth Management on YouTube. You'll get to it.
So that's on YouTube. What about your site itself?
Oh, I'm sorry. Leftbrainwm.com is where our website is.
WM stands for not waste management, but wealth management.
Correct.
Wealth
correct.
Management, a little differentiation.
Well, we'll see. We may expand at some point. We'll see.
Pick it for value through the garbage is what you're telling me, right?
There you go.
If it happens. Brian Dress from Left Brain Wealth Management. Thank you. As always, a great time talking with you. Good information here. We got all the names of the stocks. We'll put them on the show notes for episode number 884 on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. My buddy, be well. I'll see you soon. Thanks so much.
Thanks to the listeners, and I appreciate being on with you. Thanks. Andrew. Right.
That's going to wrap it up for this show. Starting off September with a bang. Great interview, great discussion with Brian Dress. Thank you so much for him coming on. And thank you so much for being a part of this this thing we call the Disciplined Investor, making sure that your financial security and your family and what you do is all secure for your future. Appreciate you. Thanks for listening. I'll see you again next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.